Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters. Let me introduce you to your host, farm broadcaster Ken Root from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to Weekend Ag Matters on this final weekend in March. What a month for agriculture. Historic flooding in Nebraska and along the Missouri River all the way south. Our region has been the center of attention by politicians. Vice President Pence and Sonny Perdue, the Secretary of Agriculture, came to see it last week. This week, a number of people, including Bill Northey, former Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, came to inspect the area once again. Bill is now the Undersecretary for the USDA. There is help available. It ranges widely, from free school lunches for many students who are in the disaster area of Nebraska, to USDA programs overlapping into Iowa to either reimburse for losses or provide low-interest loans. The Farm Service Agency can help you with any issues that you may have, assess your losses, and go see them. None of this, however, can truly make farmers whole. Let's move downstream a little bit to northwest Missouri. Richard Oswald has been farming in the region for over 40 years. I first met him during the AgriTalk era of the 1990s, and he wasn't afraid to speak up and express his opinions. A very intelligent and thoughtful man. Oswald, who farms near Langdon, Missouri, reflects on when it became apparent that his farm was going to be impacted.
The first talk we heard of it was Monday preceding the first part of that week then, and by Wednesday they were saying we were going to have a higher level on the river than we've ever seen before, but they were predicting a quick crest and then a fall. So I was optimistic that our levees would take that pretty easily and the only impacted ground would be that closest to the river.
And then came the bomb cyclone that delivered heavy rain to Missouri, Iowa, and Nebraska, setting those floodwaters in motion.
That water arrived on about Thursday, and levees held as long as they could. There were numerous levee failures north of us that would drop the level. The level would raise, and then those levees burst, and then our level would drop, and that would give us hope. And then, of course, they'd raise right back up again because the volume of water was tremendous coming down the river. It's more water than has ever come down that river in my lifetime, and I think probably my parents' lifetime as well. But eventually, the levees succumbed, and there was a 60-foot breach. By that time, there had been so much overtopping that there was a lot of water accumulated in the bottom. It didn't take long for the water to get to my house.
Oswald calls the flooding the worst he's seen.
The place where I live was my parents' farm. It's where I was born. It's where I've lived all my life. And prior to this year, it had been through three Missouri River floods, one in 1952, one in 93, and one in 2011. And I thought 2011 was bad. But the 2019 flood has beaten all records there. My home has never had water in it until this year, and now I'm afraid my home is ruined.
With over 40 levee breaches between Kansas City and Omaha, including one near his farm, Oswald says he's not certain he'll be able to get his crop in the ground this spring.
Well, it's just pretty hard to plan for that. We're not protected by levees anymore. So whatever comes down the river, just depending on how deep it gets, will determine how far up the river bottom and how deep it gets on individual farms. So just almost impossible to plan for anything until you just see that the water's gone. And right now it doesn't look like that's going to be something that's going to happen for a long time.
That was Richard Oswald from Langdon, Missouri. Anna Hastert carries this story further and addresses how to handle animal losses from the floods.
Recovery efforts are still underway in parts of southwest Iowa, as well as eastern and central Nebraska, which are all areas that have been affected by recent flooding. We've seen a lot of people rally around these communities and provide them support, whether it's through organizations like the Red Cross or just community-led efforts. There's also assistance available beyond that to agricultural producers. The USDA has many different offices, as you well know, and several of those offices have financial support for agriculture producers who are trying to recover from natural disasters such as flooding. I recently spoke to Marty Adkins, who is Assistant State Conservationist of Partnerships for the Natural Resources Conservation Service here in Iowa. And first and foremost, Adkins just wants you to know and understand that USDA staff understands that Midwest farmers are experiencing tough and stressful times right now, and they would like to extend their support to those who are struggling.
A lot of people are thinking about you, a lot of people have you in your prayers, and there are also resources. And so there's no use to try to go on your own. There are sources of help for situations dealing with land, livestock, crops, and just really the stresses of it.
Now, the Natural Resources Conservation Service offers a couple different financial and technical assistance programs to help farmers manage natural resources in a more sustainable manner. Two of their key programs are the Environmental Quality Incentive Programs and the Emergency Conservation Program. I'll let Mr. Adkins discuss these two programs a little more in depth here.
The Environmental Quality Incentives Program is, you know, one of our mainstay conservation programs that we use to implement conservation practices with. Well, one of the practices that we can use in situations like this, it deals with animal mortality, whether it's setting up composting or in-ground disposal. The Emergency Conservation Program is intended to help farmers deal with land damages after major storm or flooding events, whether it's sand deposition on fields or whether it's damaged terraces or other damaged conservation practices.
Now, aside from those programs offered by the Natural Resources Conservation Service, there's a couple other different offices who are offering programs that will help you in recovering from losses. One of those is the Farm Service Agency, also known as FSA. A couple different programs that they have available to producers are the Livestock Indemnity Program, Emergency Assistance for Livestock, Honeybees, and Farm Raised Fish Program, Emergency Forest Restoration Program, and the Tree Assistance Program. Compensation is also available to producers who purchase coverage through FSA's Non-Insured Crop Disaster Assistance Program, which protects non-insurable crops against natural disasters that result in lower yields, crop losses, or prevented planting. Eligible producers must have purchased NAP coverage for 2019 crops, though. The best way to go about figuring out whether or not you're eligible for some of these programs or even going about signing up for these programs is to visit your local USDA service center. They're more than happy to help you during this time. They understand what you're going through, maybe not on a personal level, as in they haven't experienced that for themselves before, but they've helped people in your situations many times previous. So please reach out to your local USDA service center for help or visit farmers.gov/recover. There, USDA offers a disaster assistance discovery tool that walks you as a producer through 5 questions to help you identify personalized results of what USDA disaster assistance programs will meet your needs. So once again, visit your local USDA service center. Those people will be able to help you move forward from this disaster and hopefully provide you some financial assistance during this tough time. As always, you can find more news and market information on our website, iowaagnet.com. Until then, I encourage you to stay tuned to Weekend Ag Matters here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Thanks, Anna. We'll be back in a moment to let Dustin Hoffman tell us about selling our ag products overseas, specifically to Vietnam and the Philippines. And I had a chance to talk to people at Commodity Classic about farm machinery and a new source of health care insurance for farmers. This is Weekend Ag Matters.
This is Weekend Ag Matters, produced by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network and News Talk 1540 KXEL. Here's your host, farm broadcaster Ken Root.
We have a surplus of agricultural products, corn, soybeans, and pork. People around the world have need for what we have in abundance, but getting channels open to sell into new markets is challenging. Iowa farm organizations band together to send a team to 2 countries that have great potential for greater imports of U.S. farm products.
In light of the Chinese trade situation, commodities like pork have been having to find new avenues and strengthen existing markets to get their products out. One organization that works hard on building these export markets is the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Recently, members of the Iowa Pork Producers Association joined the USMEF on a trade trip to the Philippines and Vietnam. We hear now from Gene Noam of the Iowa Pork Producers Association. So the Iowa Pork Producers joined the U.S. Meat Export Federation on a trip over to Asia, obviously to talk about some trade with different countries. Tell us a little bit about what happened.
Well, we joined USMEF, which is an organization that Iowa Pork and National Pork Board helped sponsor along with a number of other ag commodity groups. We were joined by a couple of folks from Farm Bureau, a representative from Corn Growers, and a couple of folks from Iowa Beef Council as well. We first went to Saigon, also known as Ho Chi Minh City, and spent a few days there visiting with processors and consumers of pork, and then went on to Manila in the Philippines and spent a few days there and did the same sort of thing. Actually attended a seminar where a number of importers were that use U.S. product were there, and we talked about commodity prices. We had farmers present information about their farm and the families that raise the breeding stock and the commercial pigs. And also talked about some things that are really important to us, like the We Care program, our trust model in pork production.
So how receptive of audience did you have there talking about those things?
Well, obviously, because they're importing from the U.S., there was a little bit of preaching to the choir. But what it did was give them information about the way we raise animals in the U.S., the way we raise pigs, the care we take with the environment, the care we take with caring for animals, the work we do with employees to ensure that their safety and health, and also how they know what to do with caring for animals to produce safe, high quality food for them to import from us.
And of course, with the China issues going on, it's important that we're looking for and expanding existing markets and are finding new markets, and that's a good reason for having a trip like this as well, right?
Yeah, it is a very good reason for that. We did get to talk to some local folks that knew something about that disease situation that's going on over there, and it's certainly unsettling. We know of farmers that get attacked with this disease, and it's one of the worst viruses that a pig can get. It doesn't affect any other animals. It doesn't make food unsafe, but it's very viremic, and it actually kills 100% of the animals it's exposed to, 100% of the pigs. And so it's a disease that we want to make sure that we don't bring to this part of the world.
And that was one of the questions I was going to ask, too, with Vietnam having some issues that have been found. I mean, obviously, I'm certain that you had to take precautions as far as where you went from there and making sure that you weren't helping to spread it. I mean, what kind of precautions were taken?
Well, the first precaution was we didn't go to any farms at all. We did go to markets that sell pork. And so we saw pigs, you know, pig carcasses and meat that was harvested just within the last 12 to 18 hours. But as we left those places, we also treated our shoes with the disinfectant that we brought along with us. And then the shoes that we wore along, we were asked to bring some old shoes along and just not bring those back. And then as we were entering the country as well, both coming from Vietnam and going to Manila, there was a lot of talk about and signage about walking through a foot bath to prevent the transmission of African swine fever and other foreign animal diseases. And then as we came back into the United States, we were asked questions about what do we bring along with us? Do we have agricultural products? And countries are really beefing up that process as you go back into countries to ensure that they're not bringing material or food products with you, but also that you're careful about what clothing you've got and what you've brought with you.
Now, getting a chance to go on a trip like this is not something everybody gets to do every day. I mean, when you're coming back from something like this, what were your takeaways from things you learned over there in Vietnam and the Philippines?
There are a lot of mouths to feed over there. Ho Chi Minh City, which is Saigon, has 10 million people, and they expect to grow even more. Manila has 13 million people. The interesting thing I found out about the Philippines is there's a little fact that we got debriefed by the Foreign Ag Service, a great extension of the USDA, by the way, that helps us understand all the statistics and, you know, what the markets look like and helps facilitate things as we go over there. But the Foreign Ag Service told us about in Manila, 52% of the country is 24 years old or less. That means that over a third of the country is not even old enough to drive in U.S. standards. That's a lot of new folks that are coming along to be part of that industry and part of that country. And there's a lot of people to feed, and there's a limited amount of agricultural land over there. So we see that as a great market opportunity. The other thing that we found out about was 96% literacy rate in those young folks. So it might be a poor country. It might have its level of corruption, but they've done really good on education. And we see that as a place where they'll really understand what we offer and will be educated consumers of what we want to sell to them.
All right. Well, is there anything you want to add before we wrap things up today, Gene?
You know, the only thing I'd like to say is that I'd like to thank Iowa's pork producers for participating in the checkoff program. Not only was this interesting for me, I think it's a great data gathering activity for Iowa pork producers to understand how we should make sure that we understand our consumers and make sure that we can go over and do those studies and come back and talk about what's important to those folks to ensure that we're producing the sort of pork that they would like to import.
All right. Well, Gene, I thank you very much for sharing about the trip that you took, and look forward to hearing more from the Iowa pork producers in the future.
Thank you very much for your time.
For Weekend Ag Matters, I'm Dustin Hoffman.
Next up, a past and present experience at Commodity Classic. I remember as a child, the neighbor who cut our wheat had a Gleaner combine. The brand is still going and owned by AGCO. We'll hear about the modern version of this legendary machine next. This is Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Now, here again is Weekend Ag Matters host, Ken Root.
Figure out the products that you know the names of and who the company is that owns them. Caleb Schlater is with AGCO, and AGCO for years has had what I would call legacy brand names of equipment. Gleaner combine sitting here. Boy, when I was a kid, a Gleaner was the number one combine in our part of the world.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We've seen that the distribution of the Gleaner, when you go back to the L series, the C series, everybody has had one of those on their operation. We talk to individuals every day where it's, oh, my grandpa ran Gleaner. But the key thing is where we've gone now with the S9 series, this Gleaner S9 series is sitting right in front of us, is the capacity increase, the intuitiveness of the technology. It is a different machine than what anybody's ever seen on their operation prior, but it still holds true to the fundamental values of Gleaner, being light and nimble, being able to maneuver through the fields easily, making sure we're delivering what a customer needs. And then also, the key point there is total cost of ownership. Because of the simplicity, because of the design, we're able to manage that total cost of ownership and improve the ROI or the return on investment for our customers in the field.
Well, I like a name that I can remember and that I have confidence in, but if you don't meet the same standards as the other combines, then you're right. You've got to consider that as well. But it looks like that you have the same capacity, and the machine looks like it's easy to get to the insides, and it looks like it's got drive on the rear wheels. Is that correct? So you can get out of a muddy spot?
Oh, you betcha. And because of the lightweightness of it as well, we're only 32,000 pounds. That's about 10 to 15,000 pounds lighter than every other combine in the marketplace today. That means we're able to go into places we can't, that others can't, in key points of harvest. When you have a rain like this past harvest, we all know how wet it was all across North America, allows us to make sure that we're able to get in the field. The other key thing is, like you said, the service serviceability. Everything is accessed from essentially the ground. You flip open the shield, you can get to everything. You can see it, you can make sure that you can go in and do the appropriate service intervals that you need to do, all by keeping your feet solid on the ground.
What header capacity could you run for corn, and how wide a head could you run for soybeans on this machine?
So on this machine, what we've seen is we can put up to a 12 row corn head. There's other customers who have put up a wider corn head, but from our standpoint, we put up a 12 row. We also have a 40 foot draper head that we've put on the front of this, but once again, there's other heads out in the marketplace, so we've seen a little bit wider go on the front of the leaner combine as well.
Well, I see people that, you know, they want to go with a big wider head, but it's so much more difficult to get them around. And I wonder if you do the math on if you run faster with a narrower head and you can get across the bridges without taking it off, do you kind of have a push there at the end with a cheaper machine?
Well, it always is up to what your operation needs. And when you start diving into that math, when you start figuring out, this is the extra cost that it's going to cost me in order to go with the larger head, what's my opportunity cost from a standpoint? Do I have the time to take it off the and put it onto a header cart? Do I have the time to hook it up at every other field? So it's really a matter of, is it right for your operation to go to the shorter head, or is it right for your operation to stay with the wider head?
Well, I know you guys have a number of other brands that are here. You go all the way from sprayers to combines.
Yes.
And tractors. And
yes.
There are dealers and dealer service across the country, aren't there?
Yes. So our dealer network, we have them in every state and across the country. We've had an established dealer network for a while with AGCO Corporation. And as we've built up our brands, as we've built up our distribution, we've been able to have those dealers take care of our customers.
Caleb, thank you very much for talking to us, and good luck here at the Commodity Classic in Orlando.
Oh, greatly appreciate you as well.
One final story today on farmers getting health insurance from a new company that's making waves in quite a number of areas. I spoke with Amanda Heller from the Farmers Business Network.
I'm talking with Amanda Heller, who is working with Farmers Business Network, yes, you're right, on healthcare, and the potential to be able to get healthcare options for farmers. Forever, Amanda, we have had the challenge that unless somebody worked off the farm, you couldn't get health insurance.
That is right, Ken, and that's exactly why we decided to get into this. We were hearing from our members over and over again that healthcare costs were one of the biggest challenges they were facing on the farm, you know, not even something that's directly agriculture related, and yet this cost can be crippling for a lot of people. And so, you know, after hearing from members about it for long enough, we said we have to do something. And so we have partnered with a company called Lifestyle Health Plans to offer farm-focused health plans at an affordable cost for our members.
Would you call this equivalent to what some of the companies that we consider major employers are being able to offer their employees?
Yeah, so the way that we're structuring this is actually as health benefits for employers. So these are small business-focused plans, so we're treating each farm as an employer itself, which is why one of the requirements is that you have at least 2 eligible employees or family members working full-time on the farm who can enroll in order to qualify as that small business. And so we do an individual underwriting process for each group, each farm group. And by approaching it that way, we're able to take into account what are the specific needs and requirements of your group, and what health plan costs make sense based on your specific group. And what we find is that in most cases, farms see significant cost savings relative to what they can get on the individual marketplace.
So you'd have the farmer, be that the man or woman, and the other spouse, mm-hmm. the children, all on one health care plan, and it's part of a group, so hopefully that gives you some level of savings and security as to keep making it big enough that it can handle your claims.
Yeah, so we have an administrator who handles all of the claims, and the group would be your farm, any employees who work on your farm, family members within your family. That is the group, but then we pool together lots of these groups.
Are you at a point people can find out what it would cost them based on their age and health?
Absolutely. So if you go to fbnhealth.com, you can submit a form and we will confirm eligibility. The way it works is you submit an application with some basic and a yes-no question health information, and we use that to do the underwriting to assess risk, and that's when we respond with a firm rate proposal. So that's how folks can get their prices. So it's not just you go online and you can see what your rates can be, but by going through that process is how we're really able to save people significant amounts. And then on top of that, we offer a discount on premiums for FBN members. So that's something that we've negotiated on behalf of our members. And so we encourage people, get a quote, see what it will cost for you. It's totally worth it to become an FBN member if you can get that kind of significant savings.
Thank you.
Yes, and that's fbnhealth.com. Thanks, Ken.
That's our show for this week. We'll see you back here next weekend or on our website, iowaagnet.com. Keep in mind, the strongest force of nature is determination. We live in a landscape that can be tough, but our ancestors were tougher. We live in a place that can be so productive, and the people are kind and supportive. So take a breath and view your world a little more broadly. I hope you can see it as a beautiful place, worth passing on to the next generation. For Dustin Hoffman and Anna Hastert, I'm Ken Root. Weekend Ag Matters is a production of the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.